From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made a week ago when one of the most high-profile stars in sports decided to speak openly about depression. Dak Prescott is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. In an interview on a show called In Depth with Graham Benzinger, Prescott said that he had begun to feel the effects of depression early in the pandemic. Not only was he dealing with quarantine like everybody else, but his brother was suffering from mental health challenges. And Prescott said he started to feel drained. He said, quote, "I started experiencing emotions I've never felt before. Anxiety for the main one. And then I would say I started experiencing depression. I didn't know necessarily what I was going through, to say the least," end quote. Then in April, Prescott got the news that his brother had died by suicide. His depression deepened, and he says some days he couldn't get out of his bed to go to work. Showing vulnerability is not always welcome in sports. Here's how Prescott described his decision to speak publicly about his depression. Quote, "I think being a leader is about being genuine and being real. And if I would not have talked about those things, I wouldn't realize that a lot of people go through them, and they are as common as they are. Before I can lead, I've got to make sure that my mind is in the right place to do that and lead people in the way they want to be," end quote. That kind of courage should have been the only story about Dak Prescott. But on Fox Sports, a commentator named Skip Bayless decided to go on the attack. He said that Prescott was showing weakness, that he was failing his teammates. Bayless's comments were widely condemned, but sadly, he also racked up many thousands of approving comments on social media. It's 2020, and people were still talking about depression like it was a simple character flaw. The next day, Bayless backtracked a little. He said that depression is very real, and people who live with depression deserve help. But then he said that Prescott should have sought counseling months ago. Let's talk about this. Our guests have their own powerful stories to share and their expertise to share as well. Welcome to the program, WXXI reporter and anchor and our friend Scott Feibusch. It's nice to have you here. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. It is a little weird being over on this side of the table from you.
I like grilling
I'll
you,
admit,
you know.
But...
Yes. Through the glass. Scott Feibusch is with us. Christina Mosgraber is an events coordinator and a walk manager for NAMI Rochester. Christina, always good to have you. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Evan.
And Dr. Eric Kane, a former chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center, always generous with his time. Dr. Kane, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
I should have checked you. I think we've got the clip of Skip Bayless, right? Let's listen to Skip Bayless's first comments after Dak Prescott came out and said that for months it was hard for him to get out of bed this summer and go to work. Here's what Bayless said.
You're commanding a lot of young men and some older men, and they're all looking to you to be their CEO, to be in charge of the football team. Because of all that, I don't have sympathy for him going public with, "I got depressed. I suffered depression early in COVID to the point that I couldn't even go work out." Look, he's the quarterback of America's team. And you know and I know, this sport that you play, it is dog eat dog. It is no compassion, no quarter given on the football field. If you reveal publicly any little weakness, it can affect your team's ability to believe in you in the toughest spot.
Dr. Kane, I'll start with you. I think that is possibly the dumbest thing I have heard in months. What do you think?
Well, actually, you know, if you think of that quote, and you go through the whole, whatever, 12 minutes, is he has a whole bunch of dumb things. You know, that's, I don't know if that's the dumbest of all of them. You know, this was such a disheartening thing to hear. It was such a stereotype. And so, actually, ignorant of what we know about depression. Actually, listening to Dak Prescott, seeing him, you know, he did a video interview with someone named Graham Benzinger.
Yeah.
And to compare how this guy looks in this interview with, you know, he's composed, he's commanding, he has a sense of himself, and he's also, as he says, genuine and vulnerable and transparent. And these qualities, I mean, we think of here's, and I'm gonna bring up the racial aspect of it too, because this is a man who's being treated by this commentator like he's some employee, although he says he's supposed to be the CEO. he's supposed to perform like this hard athlete and not in and just go out and be, you know, in effect an automaton. And Bayless is ignorant about what depression is, about what recovery is, about how solid someone can be. And then you see Dak Prescott, and he's the epitome of composure and thoughtfulness and reflection and what I would call power. Power in himself. So I won't go on now. We'll have plenty of time to talk about this because you've got some people with more lived experience. But I think it's really clear that this was just so, 1820.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Christina Mosgraber. And Christina, I'm reading a comment from another NFL wide receiver, Torrey Smith, who's tried to be open about his own struggles. And he says, Skip Bayless, you are the reason why people stay silent when they are struggling. Depression doesn't care how much money you have, the color of your skin, or if you play for the Cowboys. It's a real issue, and the comments were ignorant. That's from Torrey Smith. Do you think that when a high-profile person who's a national commentator with a big audience says the kind of things that Bayless said, do you agree with Torrey Smith, who says that's the reason that people stay silent when they're struggling?
Oh, I 100% agree because, you know, I was devastated to hear Skip Bayless's comments. I was so proud of Dak Prescott, and I was so, you know, I was just so encouraged. And then to hear that, it was just such a crushing blow because ignorance and voices like that are why the stigma in mental health has been perpetuated for so, so long. And, you know, to have him come out and say that, really just, you know, it just sets it back so far. And I hope that, you know, a lot of people see through that and realize that it is, it was just a ridiculous message. And I'm so proud of Torrey Smith speaking up and saying, you know, this is why people don't speak up, because ignorant messages like that, no matter if it's Skip Bayless or, you know, society or you know, ignorant people, you know, who knows, bosses or colleagues or friends or family, that's why people don't speak up. I can certainly say that's why I didn't speak up, is fear and shame and social stigma. So I couldn't be more proud of Dak Prescott, and I'm so grateful for having this conversation.
Well, I was thinking about the right kind of people who could talk about this, and just asked on social media if people wanted to share their stories, not to exploit, but to illuminate. And our friend Scott Feibusch reached out to me and said, okay, I'll do it. And, you know, to be honest, Scott, not because there's anything wrong at all with depression, but just because, you know, knowing you, I didn't know. And I said, really? And I'm really grateful that you're here. Can you tell us what you've been going through?
It's been a long thing for me. I mean, I can go back, you know, 20-some years when I was going through these periods where I just, you know, didn't want to get out of bed and couldn't push myself to go through what I had to do on a daily basis. It ebbs and it flows. Most days are pretty good. The last few months, for, you know, obvious reasons that I think apply to a lot of us, have been difficult. I think there is, you know, there is something that happens in our business, honestly, where, you know, we come in here and we report on all of these things that are happening in a world that has turned upside down in the last few months on us in so many ways. And how can it not affect all of us who are in here, you know, and our job, your job, and my job, and our colleagues' jobs here is to come in and not to put ourselves into it for the most part. And to come in and just say, okay, here's what's happening in the world. And
we're detached.
And to try to be detached and to try to put on, you know, as I like to say, sort of the public radio, just slightly ironic twist on things. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there have been times since all of this started where I've made it through a day here and I go home after being on the air here for however many hours. And I can't move out of bed for a few hours after that. It's a real thing. There are a lot of factors, obviously, that play into it beyond just the job. But I am beginning increasingly to believe that it is something somewhat endemic to our profession as well. I will say honestly that part of the reason why I was willing and even eager to come in and do this with you today was in part seeing what you tweeted after your show yesterday. About reacting perhaps a little bit more vociferously than you would have preferred.
I had a kind of a rough moment on the show yesterday.
Yeah, and which is happening to all of us. And then also, I'm not gonna call him out by name, but another member of the media here in town, who I kind of follow casually on Twitter, happened to tweet something yesterday, saying that this person had been out of work for a while and trying to recover from depression on his end. So I think mm-hmm. you know the support breeds support, and I think that the more mm-hmm. of us who are willing to support each other, I think hopefully the easier it gets. For all of us who are trying to work our way through this in whatever way it's affecting us.
I think you can help us understand, especially one of the points you're making about the feeling of almost paralysis or feeling like I can't get out of bed. Because the listeners who might hear Skip Bayless's comments and think, yeah, he's right, or don't sort of get it, and I'm not trying to be disparaging, I'm just trying to understand, right? There are people who... their experience with, I don't want to get out of bed or I can't get out of bed, is an 8-year-old saying, well, I don't want to get out of bed. And they think, well, you have to. Get up. You're being lazy. And then when they hear adults and they haven't experienced depression themselves, they might think, well, sorry, suck it up. Be tough. You know, be stronger than that. There's a difference between a Saturday morning when you want to spend an extra hour in bed before you make coffee and the feeling that you're describing. How would you describe it to people who haven't been there, Scott?
It's an emptiness. I know that one of the ways, as I've analyzed my own experience with depression, there's a lot of it with me that's very seasonal. I'm feeling it very hard now, realizing, okay, I went, you know, to my friend's outdoor swimming pool for the last time this last weekend. I'm not going to be in a pool here again until May, June of next year. At the same time, there were days in the last few weeks where it was bright and sunny and in the 80s outside. And I'm driving around outside, and I'm just feeling completely detached from it. And, you know, I can see
like a numbness?
Yeah, you know, I can see that it's sunny. I can see that it's warm. I can see that somehow I'm supposed to be enjoying this and getting something out of it, and it's just not penetrating. And, you know, and again, I'm not – you've got the experts on here to talk to why and how this happens, but – you know, there's a realization, at least that I've gone through in the process of learning how to cope with this, to learn to stop blaming myself entirely for it. The analogy that I would use, you know, I'm also, as long as we're learning things about me here that you didn't already know, I'm also mildly diabetic. I don't make a big deal about that. It doesn't affect my life that much. I'm not on insulin. I take some meds. It takes care of it. But, you know, I can't just will my pancreas into handling insulin properly.
Your pancreas doesn't have a character flaw.
No, there is nothing intrinsically wrong with my pancreas except whatever genetics have, in this case, apparently have doomed me to. And, you know, there is, I think, this, you know, you saw it in the Skip Bayless comments, this unwillingness still to realize in a lot of corners of you know, the commentariat that has to weigh in on everything these days that, you know, this is also something that is chemical, that in a lot of cases is inherited, that can last for, and you can't just will yourself to say, yeah, I know I got to be strong and get up and go do all these things, or I've got to be able to go out and enjoy it, when it's just not happening. It's just not happening. And if you're lucky, you find the right combinations of therapy and medication the same way to address it. But we can talk about this more, that's not as easy as it is to say, okay, I can get my A1C under control and keep it that way by taking 3 pills a night.
I find this to be such an important point that Scott's making, and I want to turn to Eric and Christina. And I'll also say to listeners, if you want to call, and I see Rich on the line, we'll get to you in a moment, Rich. Others, you want to call the program, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. You can email the program, connections at WXXI.org. Yeah, Dr. Kane, go ahead.
So, you know, there are a couple things that Scott said that I think are really important and sometimes lost. One is this blaming quality. And, you know, if you noticed, Bayless blamed people for being upset, anxious, depressed about being isolated in COVID. And of course, as COVID was starting, is, you know, these, all the home restrictions, and all the social isolation, a lot of us were talking about, well, this is really a major challenge for a lot of people. And, you know, some data are coming out now from CDC and other places, survey data published in the so-called peer review literature that, you know, perhaps a quarter of people, you know, have experienced some degree of anxiety and depression. The other thing which Scott talked about was this kind of detachment, numbness, not responding to the beautiful day. And we use the word depression, but really the clinical condition is really very varied. So there's some people who really are sad, down in the dumps, blue, and, you know, have this dark pessimism. There are other people who are just, you know, they have no joy. And there are other people who seem not to care. This is all part of that spectrum. And one of the things when you think about working with someone is helping to understand what each person's lived experiences, what their own individual experiences. And then as we know, the treatments and the medications, you know, the psychotherapy and the medications are challenging because not everybody responds exactly to the same thing. And that takes some work. And indeed, this is a condition, an illness, where it takes time and often a lot of trying and trial and error, because we don't have a great science to find the right step. But it is possible to do that. That's the other thing which, you know, I would say for many years working with people was, you know, I know this is going to be difficult. We're in this together. And we've been through this, or I've been through this many more times than I can count in the days when I was seeing people, and I'm not seeing people clinically now. But in those days when I did a lot of inpatient work and outpatient work, and would say, this is going to take a while, but if we stick together on this and if we stand together, then we will find a way. So Scott's really touched on a whole range of things which I think are really important.
Yeah, and let me read the comments off air from a listener who called in to share, and I'll just read the comments from the listener. Quote, for people who have not suffered from depression, they don't understand what a crushing blow it can be. It's not just a little nervousness. It can be like having a panic attack and as if someone is jumping you from behind. It's not feeling a little nervous or blue. It's like what Scott said. It could lead to not having the willpower to push yourself through. And Dr. Kane, Christina, So Dr. Kane, let me ask both of you about what Scott said that really stands out to me. When he says those beautiful days that I know should feel good are not really penetrating, I go back to what Bayless said, and I think this is where the disconnect comes in with many people about depression, especially people who don't really have experience with it. There's this idea that depression comes from events. And Bayless tried to clarify and backtrack by saying, look, you know, Dak Prescott said that he was feeling depressed even before his brother died by suicide. And my point was, well, you should have pushed yourself through then. And so Bayless seems to think that if you lose a family member, then depression is warranted. But if you have a nice day like Scott Feibusch described and you can't push yourself through it, then that's on you. And Dr. Kane, that distinction stands out to me because I think that's another example of him not getting it. But I don't think he's alone. I think a lot of people who haven't experienced depression think, just push through it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we're talking about the difference between being sad about something. You know, you've lost a loved one. You've lost something important. You got fired. You got divorced. You got, you know, we can go on of a tremendous number of life events that really throw us for a loop. But it's also important to understand that what we would call mood disorders in the broader psychiatric category can come on out of the blue for some people who are susceptible to them. And we know that susceptibility varies across a lot of things. Scott mentioned family history. He also touched on what we know very well in Rochester is seasonal affective disorder. You know, a lot of people are very light sensitive. And, you know, as the light starts to change, as it does in, it starts changing, actually, you know, you can tell in talking to some people in August. And August, September, October, and they, you know, well, we know that there are folks who start to feel muddle-headed and detached and maybe quite depressed. So, It is a medical condition. It is a treatable medical condition. People recover. If Bayless was talking about someone with cancer who had recovered and taught, but while he was having cancer as a football player, said, I've got cancer, and then comes back and starts playing again, he would say, what a hero. And so his prejudice, and I'm using that prejudgment, his bias is so evident in the way he dealt with someone who says, yeah, I'm doing really well now. It was very hard. And obviously the Dallas Cowboys weren't so stupid as to spend $31 million on a guy who, you know, isn't fit to be the quarterback.
Yeah, really ugly comments from Bayless. Christina, how do you see the point that, that Scott was making about, you know, so his recent experience, especially this summer?
So I can completely empathize with that, Scott, in that, you know, I remember feeling when I was struggling with my depression, the way I describe it is an apathy. I would, you know, it was interesting hearing you say that, Scott, because I had the almost exact same experience. I would get up. We have a house in Sodus Point, my favorite place in the world, and I would get up, and usually I want to go to the beach, and I want to garden, and I want to deal with stuff, and I would lay on the lounger all day, and I just didn't understand what that was about, and I remember feeling very confused about that, and you know, as I worked through my recovery, learning about what the symptoms of depression, what it looks like, and I just want to thank that listener for you know, adding that comment, because a lot of people think depression is just sadness. And or it's just triggered, you know, just making air quotes, triggered by a life event. And there's so many pieces to depression, and that apathy is one of them that can be just so overwhelming, because you have just this kind of general disinterest in a beautiful day or things that you used to love or that really used to bring you joy. And, you know, that's a warning sign to look out for. And I think that's one of the most important things to share, too, is that, you know, if you see warning signs in yourself or you're feeling them, to reach out for help, because there is help. You can get better, you know, and you can live your best life. It's just all about finding that right treatment and that right support. And it is an illness, you know, it's an illness like anything else and can be treated. But I can definitely, Scott, I can so just relate to that apathy of a beautiful day and just feeling kind of uninterested. So
what are you doing?
Evan, I want to point out that, yeah. and Christina touched on it, that this is, if you want to think of it, is a systemic illness. And what I mean systemic is there's a loss of appetite in many people, a loss of energy, a change in bowel function, a change in sleep patterns. Some people sleep too little and have a characteristic problems with sleeping too little. There are some people who actually sleep too much. So the circadian rhythm is totally kind of destroyed. There, you know, people will be having a sense of constant sense of fatigue. And, you know, clearly, as people have started to look into this more deeply, they see fundamental hormonal changes, fundamental neurochemical changes. So we're not talking about something that's just simply how I feel psychologically, which, of course, is, you know, what we're most sensitive to. We're talking about a systemic condition where part of it is how alert I am, how upbeat I am, how responsive I am to the environment. And if you think of everything, this is someone becoming much less responsive to the external environment.
So, Scott, how are you dealing now?
A couple of things. One thing that I wanted to address, first of all, is that you know the fatigue thing is absolutely spot on. You know, I don't think I've had a really normal night of sleep in the last month or so. It's either too much, it's too little, it's trying to take a 20-minute nap in the middle of the day that turns into 2 hours and then screws up being able to get to bed at night. You know, and then piled in on that are the external factors that, you know, we've all been piled in at home with our families, if we're lucky enough to have families around us to support us for months now. And, you know, that all kind of plays in on itself, too. What am I doing? That's an interesting question, too. I'm still trying to find the right combination of meds. I have been through either 7 or 8 so far. You know, I know that part of what's happened to me in the last month or so has been trying to taper off, with the help of my primary care doctor, a med that absolutely did not work, that was just draining me and making me constantly groggy and not providing the help I was looking for. And it's fascinating for me, not being expert on this, you know, to see just how inexact and how imprecise this science is. you know, I know that I can take my three metformin pills a night, and I can see a number that tells me, okay, my A1C is here, I'm getting the diabetes under control properly. And there's no good way, I like being able to quantify things. There is no good way to quantify this. It doesn't lend itself as easily to that, and it makes it, I think, that much harder. Even when you're fortunate enough, and I acknowledge my privilege here, I have decent health insurance, I know how to advocate for myself and try to find professionals who will help me. I have a good primary care doctor who has been trying to help me. I've got family support. I've got a flexible schedule that allows me to go to therapy appointments in the middle of the day if I need to. And that's something, obviously, that's not accessible to everybody. But even with that, it can be maddeningly hard to find, to get that help that your experts are talking about. Even in a community like this, it can be maddeningly hard to find that right combination that is accessible, that is properly tuned to understanding what your individual needs are, especially as they ebb and flow over time. It's maddening. And then on top of that, a lot of the things that normally I would be doing for self-care have gone away as a result of the pandemic. I was getting into a new hobby of trying stand-up comedy a year ago that was giving me some new reasons to get engaged in things and meet new groups of people. Well, guess what? That went away pretty fast and has only recently started to just edge back in. I travel a lot. That obviously has been much more difficult to do, if not impossible. I should be at a radio industry convention right now in Nashville. Well, that's not happening right now. And instead I'm here. And so those are, even if there are internal factors within me that are causing this, there are external factors, I think, that are making it more difficult to get through. At least that's my completely amateur analysis.
I find, the fact that you got into stand-up comedy, in the age that you are, which is not that old, but
it's not that young either.
You're not 17, you're not 27, yeah. You're doing stand-up. That is remarkably brave. And so you've obviously demonstrated a lot of courage. I say that with love. Did you have any hesitation about speaking publicly about your depression?
A little bit, but, the more honestly, some of these comments I feel make it more urgent because you've got to fight this ignorance somehow,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And if people are going to say these things, do you just sit by and let them pass and say, well, yeah, I'm experiencing this too, but I'm not going to come out and say anything? It's I think, a little bit especially awkward, though, for somebody in the position that I'm in. I mean, I'm certainly not a major public figure in Rochester by any means. I'm just the guy you hear on the radio when Alex or Beth needs a day off. But it's still, there was something in the back of my mind that said, okay, do I want to put that in any danger? And I realized, A, I don't have that much to lose. B, I feel like I'm in a pretty supportive environment here.
I hope so.
And among friends. And I think this is a pretty good place to be in general. I think we're a pretty forward-thinking organization here. Like I say, in a lot of ways, I am privileged because I get through this. I am getting at least some of the help that I need and trying certainly to get more. And I know I'm still going to have a roof over my head tomorrow, no matter what. I know that I'm still going to have a family that supports me through this. And you realize how many people don't. And you realize, okay, whatever's going on, and I hate to even start making this comparison, but, whatever was going on inside of Daniel Prude's brain chemistry, where clearly he did not get the help that he needed, somehow this is at least a very small part of that in destigmatizing this in every form, whether it's relatively small and tolerable or whether it's something obviously much larger that makes it that much harder to function in society. Does that make sense?
It does to
I'm
me.
Rambling here.
Because no, I don't think that's rambling at all. And I think the larger picture that our community especially has to deal with now, as we have calls for reform, sometimes it is oversimplified, and sometimes journalists are guilty of oversimplifying by saying, well, just put more money into mental health, as if that's easy, as if that is magically going to change anything. If only people would get mental health help instead of police coming. Well, the night that you're talking about, the person did and still ended up you know, in a very vulnerable position. It's complicated. There's a lot that we're going to have to work as journalists to understand, to present properly. But I do take the point. This is not simply just a magical solution, and it's going to be a difficult road for anybody, probably in your position. And I hope that you feel, you know, as hard as that may be, you know, you're getting a lot of love here. Twitter's filled up with a lot of love for you. I'm hearing it from all sides, so a lot of admiration. So I hope you feel good about the fact that you're going to unlock what you need to unlock going forward.
I hope so. I mean, social media is a whole interesting piece of this, too. I took myself off Facebook last week.
Oh, good for you.
And I said to myself, it was Friday morning, I was getting in some asinine argument with somebody. I said, you know what? This is just, I don't want to do this right now.
Yeah,
this is hurting my brain right now.
Yeah.
And I know it, and I can sense it, and I took myself off for a few days. Of course, now I've gotten engaged in Twitter instead, so I don't know if that's really helped matters that much completely. But, you know, there are all of these what I think of as externalities that didn't exist a generation or two ago. But mm-hmm. I hope on the flip side of that there is, you know, I've certainly gotten, you know, from the little bit I've been looking at social media today since I posted the link to the show, you know, yes, there are definitely the number of people who are out there who are going through this, who have gone through this. It's so many more than any of us realize.
No question about it. No question.
And the more any of us are willing to speak out about it, I know not everybody is, and I understand that. And so if I have the ability to do that without suffering risk in my life, yeah, I'm at this point. You know, I'm not 17. I'm not 22. I've got a career more or less. I'm not endangering it. So I have the luxury of doing this. And I do. I recognize that privilege.
So I'm way late for a break. And what I want to do is this. If you're on the phone, we're coming to you right after the break. So thanks for hanging in there on the phones. We'll read some listener comments as well. And I want to hear from Dr. Kane and Christina Mosgraber about some of these complicated themes that Scott's talking about, but yes, we need people to recognize that they are not alone, that this is more common, as Scott says and Dak Prescott have said, than perhaps people realize when they don't talk about it publicly. But it's still a very complicated picture on what to do about it. And so let's take that break, come back to your calls, and then we'll revisit that subject before the end of the hour right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, expert in child health and education say the pandemic will have lasting effects on children's social and emotional needs and their overall well-being. We talk with experts from Rock the Future and the Children's Institute about how parents and teachers can help children navigate this unprecedented time. That's coming up Wednesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get to your phone calls. Rich in Rochester first. Hi, Rich. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
You know the thing. Hi, Evan. How you doing?
Good. You're a little hollow. I don't know if you're on speaker, but I'm trying to hear you. Go ahead.
Is this better?
Yeah, a little bit better. Go ahead. Yep.
Yeah. I'm listening to what Skip Bayless said, and I'm wondering why his job is not threatened. If it was a racist thing, or if it was a feminist thing said, his job would be threatened. This is just as bad. Mm-hmm. And also, I think a lot of us have experienced it. I mean, my friends and I have talked a lot on the phone about all the things that we struggle with as far as dealing with what we're going through. Depressions, feeling alone. I have to say Father's Day was a tough day for me. I was with my children and started crying. I've never done that. At the changes that we've all been going through, has been a lot of people won't acknowledge it, yeah. And it's dangerous not to, and it's dangerous not to discuss it.
So,
and just one more thing.
Yeah, please.
Explain to me how he looked at depression and was that apathy feeling. And he asked me a question that I didn't even know how to answer. He said, Rich, have you ever woken up in the morning and absolutely nothing matters to you? Mm-hmm. And I listened to what he said, and it blew my mind. He said, no, you're not sad. I have my children. I have my family. And there's nothing that I can think of when I wake up some days that matter to me in any way, shape, or form. That's a scary thing. And how do you use willpower to get out of that state?
Yeah, I don't know. I heard Christina Mosgraber reacting viscerally there. Christina, you want to respond to some of what Rich said? Go ahead.
Yeah, Rich, I just I want to thank you so much for calling in. I totally agree about Skip Bayless. I question that myself, and I guess, you know, what I was really responding to, too, is, you know, I'm so grateful that you and your friends are staying in touch, and the connection is so important, whether you're struggling or you're not struggling, you know, especially during this time, staying connected to those that you trust and support you can make so much difference. But that feeling of, you know, I have nothing to live for, that is something I've experienced and, you know, happened in the time leading up to when, you know, my life reached a critical mass. And I would just always, always recommend, please, you know, your friend or you to not underestimate those feelings. It's just like, you know, it's not a big deal. Because I always encourage people, if it feels off, if it seems off, you know, to reach out. And, you know, I know that's, it sounds so much easier said than done. And I don't mean to be trite about it, but there are so many resources in our town. And just to talk to those friends you have, or have your friend talk more, and to not ignore those feelings, because those feelings can, you know, they can really decline quickly, if you will. So please don't hesitate, or have your friend hesitate, to talk about those feelings and find some support and help.
Mm. Dr. Kane, what do you think?
Well, you know, one of the really, well, there are a bunch of things to touch on here, but clearly in the context of, like, there's nothing, then, you know, it's hard because you, and I'm going to say this without being insensitive to it. Those are times when you almost have to sit through it. It's not like you can just manipulate yourself or have someone come in and jolly you up. But at the same time, it's really important to have other people sit with you when you're sitting through that. This is where connections become protective, because when you're in the middle of not being able to see straight, I don't know how to use that, in when things sure. just don't seem like they make sense, or the world doesn't feel right, then that's when you ask for help. You know, that was what Prescott said. And he basically said, you know, I wasn't, you know, whether he didn't use these words, but thinking straight or feeling like myself, I asked for help. And, you know, we often have the philosophy that, you know, we'll help each other. However, what's really clear is it's really hard for us to ask for help or to accept help when it's offered, especially men. You know, the idea that you would open yourself up the way Scott has. And I was listening to Scott and thinking, you know, this is kind of like breast cancer or cancer in general. 50 or 60 years ago, I remember my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1964. At the age of 44, she lived another 30 years, but she wouldn't tell anybody. She wouldn't tell her, you know, her sister, her family. Betty Ford, you know, was a stigma fighter. You know, we've got two stigma fighters on the radio today, people who've had lived experience who come out and say, look, this is what I'm dealing with. And, you know, I think one of the ways that we have to turn this around is simply to say it, you know, and I don't mean this in a cavalier way. It is what it is. It's here. We have to deal with it in the same way that cancer is here, or heart disease is here, or rheumatoid arthritis is here. And we have to deal with these things like the diabetes, except at this point we're at the edge of what we know and what we don't know.
I want to ask Scott about something Rich talked about particularly. I don't know if this is popular or not, or unpopular. I'm generally very hesitant to get on board with the idea of somebody said something, so let's fire them. Now, Rich is not, I don't think Rich is being cavalier about it. I think he's saying this is serious enough that he shouldn't even be employed. Primarily the reason that I don't feel that way is because I think we at least have to offer moments where people can grow and kind of reevaluate. I am deeply disappointed at the least with what Bayless said the next day. I mean, I still don't think he gets it at all. But I do want to afford people the room for growth here. I don't know how you feel given what you're working through right now. You want to see him off the air?
Not necessarily.
I mean, his bad sports takes, he should be off the air.
Well, there is that. And I have to say, by the way, that if you're making a list of all of the stupid things that we've heard said this year in general,
oh, you're saying that doesn't even crack it?
I'm just saying that it
given
is
the nature of 2020,
it's an extremely extensive list.
Yeah, I understand.
Is all that I'm saying. I look at this. I mean, one of the things that I try to come back to find strength from that is also a challenge this year because it's not there in the same form. Is my religion? I'm Jewish. We are coming up on the High Holy Days, starting this Friday night. And, you know, obviously one of the big tenets of the High Holy Days as we work our way to Yom Kippur is repentance and the idea that, you know, we can learn from what we have done wrong, we can apologize for it, we can move on. I would much rather in any of these scenarios, you know, I would much rather provide him with some opportunity to learn from people like me or whoever and understand better what's going on and understand better what it really means and hopefully maybe be a better person going forward.
You got to be committed to actually
maybe
learning.
Maybe I'm overly optimistic.
I know. I'm with you there. And he plays a professional troll in sports media. So I don't know if he's playing a character all the time, but this matters now. I mean, the people are really hurting. So I'm almost to where Rich is. I think I'd be happy to see Bayless off the air. I think people's sports opinions would suddenly get smarter.
I wouldn't weep too much. Let's be
I'm with you there. Jane in Rochester next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Evan. I've never been that depressed. I don't think that I didn't say to myself, I'll get through this somehow, I'll find a way. But I have been down there for sure, so I've developed a lot of coping mechanisms, things that work for me. There was you remember Mad Magazine, on the cover one year, I saw this one cover and bought the magazine. It said on the front, if you're not worried now, you're not paying attention. And it's almost implying, like, what's wrong with you? You should be a little worried now and then. It would be normal. And I've heard the depression referred to as just the common cold of psychopathology. It's such a human, it's everywhere. But now I'm not talking about the deep clinical depression where you probably would benefit from help. But I'm wondering, too, that we all have our different problems and ways of coping, but we are going through a really stressful time. I mean, every day I think, how many more days till the election? And then how many more days do we have to find out who the president is? And just thinking about being nervous that whole time gets to me sometimes, but it will be over one way or another, I guess. But what we're going through right now, it's almost like psychological warfare is being done to us and all the gaslighting. And it makes me, I know you're not conspiratorial, but I think that's part of what's going on against us. There's nothing you can settle on. It's hard to make plans. Reality, in quotes, changes every day. And so we have that additional political reality that we have to somehow cope with. And I know Nancy Pelosi has been saying, don't pay any attention to what he says. You know, it's just distraction. And even if he means it today, tomorrow he won't, you know, and that sort of thing. But I think we do have some special challenges here, and we need each other. And also, if you don't have a friend at hand, sometimes I find that writing give some release to ventilate. Thank you very much,
Thank
Evan.
You, Jane. Yeah, thank you. So let me ask Christina about this, because Christina, you know, Scott talked about kind of getting away from Facebook and some of these places where the tension, especially in politics, especially now, can really boil over. And I've been in Scott's position. It's been 1 a.m. and I went, but wait, there's still somebody wrong on the internet. How can I go to bed when somebody is wrong on the internet? You know, I mean, I've been there. And I wonder, Christina, for yourself, are there certain things that you take yourself away from when you feel yourself, whether it's politics or other things, and the anxiety and the tension getting too high?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So I'm not on Facebook. That's a conscious choice that I made quite a while ago because it would make my anxiety and my stress just way too high. And so I just knew that was something. And, you know, I know I've missed a lot of positive things, but it was just a choice I had to make for myself. Currently, I really have to reduce my coverage or watching my news coverage. I love staying current, but I have to turn it off. Because I think there's a big difference for me, just speaking for me, there's a big difference between staying informed and consuming it to my own detriment.
Yep.
Because I've learned that if I do it too much, it really does get my anxiety and my depression and my almost sometimes hopelessness going. And I realize that's when I have to step back and recalibrate and focus on something else.
I have been guilty of that, yeah.
Yeah, even if it's something else, is watching reruns of something I've seen 100 times, it's just something to like move away from that space of what's going on in the world at the moment.
Absolutely. I've been guilty of that, especially early in the pandemic. That was me. I mean, I was overloaded. And
totally.
I do think, Scott, not to sound like we're pitching here, but I do think cable news can ratchet up the tension. All things considered is usually what brings the temperature down.
It does. It does. 4-5-4-6-2. No, wait.
We're not even on pledge.
I'm sitting in the right seat for it, though. No, I think, you know, this again gets back to what I said towards the beginning of the show. I think this is going to be seen eventually as an occupational hazard for all of us in this business, is that I laugh because I read all of these very well-intentioned suggestions about, well, you know, take yourself away from the news for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's my job. It's Evan's job. You know, we can't turn it. We can turn it off maybe for a weekend if we're lucky.
Yeah, it's good.
But
mm-hmm.
you know, it worries me because I think there are probably a lot more people in the business who aren't talking about it, who I'm sure are affected by it too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to turn to Dr. Kane as we get ready to close, and I'll just say, I mean, the emails that I don't even have time to get to, I'm so grateful. Sarah Rutherford, Paul Kingsley has weighed in, Sejal Shah. There's so many people who are sending notes of support and solidarity with Scott and with this issue, and I'm really just grateful for that. So much love to everyone who's done that. Dr. Kane, about a minute left here. If we talk in this community about mental health, especially when we talk about responding to mental health crisis, we do oversimplify sometimes. What do you want us to be speaking about in the community to make sure we don't oversimplify this challenge?
Well, you know, this is you're walking right into the situation of Daniel Prude and the whole question of how we're going to respond in a much more thoughtful and systematic way, because the crisis is a failure. You know, when you have to go out in the middle of the night, when you have to have someone come to an emergency room, it means more often than not that something didn't happen before that prevented it, or that there wasn't an intervention, that there wasn't a way. You know, Scott showed, and he, as he put it, as a person of privilege, he could go around and look and have the resources and the knowledge and the savvy to try to find help. So many people don't have that, and they end up in these crises because their path is blocked or there is no path at all. And this especially affects people of disadvantage and people of color who've really been at the short end of this for a long time. So we've got a lot of renewing and redoing and reimagining and building.
Yeah, for listeners who want more on this, we're going to have conversations on this. Sejal's asking about a lack of psychiatry option. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about mental health funding and changing that system. We're going to talk about as we go into the winter months in the pandemic and mental health. Dr. Kane, you're going to get a phone call about that. We need to do that.
Well, this is also a central component of the RAISE Commission,
yep.
And I can speak about that personally. I know that.
Dr. Kane, thanks for making time today. Let's talk soon. Christina Mosgraber from NAMI Rochester. Always great, Christina. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Scott Feibusch, much love. Thank you, sir, for telling your story.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Rob, Megan, Evan saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.